There is a brutal honesty about the resurrection appearances in the Gospels. The disciples as a whole look at the reports of the women as idle tales. And then enter Thomas. The whole of history, unfairly, I think, has dubbed him Doubting Thomas. There was nothing inadequate about his formation. He followed Christ like the rest of them. He saw the miracles. He had his feet washed. It was Thomas who said, when Jesus was going to Jerusalem, "Let me go as well and die with him." Can you blame him, though, for his doubts? He saw Jesus hang on the cross and die. He needs more than words. He needs to see and touch the wounds of Jesus' crucifixion. His doubt is not for lack of conviction in Jesus. It is just that he had to deal with what he saw and experienced. A death, a violent death on a cross. In many ways, though, John is looking past Thomas. Jesus' own words, "You have seen and believed. Blessed are those who have not seen and yet believe." This is actually the whole purpose for the book of John. Count how many times he says, "Come and see and believe." So Thomas is a great case study. But the real concern of John and his spiritual descendants is your belief and mine. When we talk about doubt, there are several categories, but three that emerge in my mind. The first doubter is from Missouri. "Show me." Thomas says, "Unless I see the mark of the nails in his hands and put my finger in the mark of the nails and my hand in his side, I will not believe." The resurrection goes against our empirical categories. While we may see cases of those who have come back from the dead and written to tell all about it, or those who have had near-death experiences, we have not seen anyone come back from the other side in a resurrected body, one that eats and has complete physicality, but is able to go against the laws of nature and go through walls, etc. The heritage of the last 200 years in Europe and North America is one of scientific explanation and evidence. So how do we answer? Before we get to that, let's look at another reason for doubt. The great question of theodicy. Why bad things happen to good people. These kinds of doubters have had a significant kind of trauma or have experienced suffering to a degree that it makes them unable to believe. Thomas's grief over the loss of his master and the horrible way in which it takes place perhaps puts him in this category as well. Gordon Lathrop says, "Knock on any door in your community and you'll find some kind of agony." There's an old Indian text that talks of the suffering of war and destruction. It goes like this: "Many were burning, others were burnt. All were shattered and scattered mindlessly, their eyes bulging. Some hugged their sons, others their fathers and mothers, unable to let them go, and so they died. Others leapt up in their thousands, faces disfigured, and were consumed by the fire. Everywhere were bodies squirming on the ground. They breathed their last as living torches." Yesterday marks the 19th anniversary of the beginnings of the genocides in Rwanda and Burundi. And there are some in our own community, those Burundians who witnessed just these kinds of things and just these kinds of images. Well, there's one final category of doubt, one especially unique to our age. This is the doubt in institutional religion itself. "I love your Christ," says Gandhi, "just not your Christians." History, even recent history, is rife with the failings of the church. And it's easy to point the finger at the Roman Catholic Church. But we are all guilty of institutional sin. Many a person has been let down by the failing of someone who whacked them with a proverbial ruler on the knuckles or the Bible over their heads. It doesn't help that religious people take the bait in getting pulled into the polarities of political debates. so that a political view becomes equated with a religious one, and vice versa. Polarity makes news, and we get fooled into these kinds of dialogues. More and more in surveys, people list their religious affiliation simply as none. And so we have the rise of nuns, not the ones in the habits, but the ones who have no religious affiliation. How do we respond then to these doubts? Rather than offer slick answers or evidence that demands a verdict, we need to state up front that it's easier not to believe. Then our lives need not change. We can go on in our comfortable existence, never having to think of ultimate meaning. Or we can proceed with making the resurrection an item of irrelevance, rather than something we actually have to deal with. To present the resurrection of Christ is to offer a challenge. If Christ is risen, then we are not dealing with a memory or a good feeling, but a living Lord. However, the most telling proof of the resurrection comes in the human heart. The innate desire within us for hope and for joy. Listen to the words of Chris Webb. Drunk, he pulled himself to his feet again and weaved his way toward another doorway at the end of the street. He hit the door hard with his shoulder and it crashed back on its hinges, toppling him into the inky blackness of the hallway beyond. Cursing and groaning, he clattered noisily up the wooden staircase. A voice from a neighboring house yelled at him to keep quiet. Pushing open another door, he tumbled his way into a large attic studio and collapsed into a chair in the middle of the open floor. The candle, now burning low, sat in the open window behind him. As the light shone over his shoulder, he contemplated the canvas mounted on the easel before him. There were four figures gathered in a tight huddle in the center of the painting, surrounded by a thick and impenetrable gloom. Their faces were illuminated by some bright light, but everything else lay in darkness. For perhaps half an hour, the young man pondered before the canvas, unmoving, his eyes half shut. A casual observer might have thought him asleep. Then with a start, he leapt up and frantically began mixing paints into a cracked wooden palette, thick, oily purples and browns, grays and greens. Stabbing a brush into the mixture, he began edging color into the shadows around the leftmost figure. He painted for hours, energetically, even frenetically. As dawn began to color the city in a soft crimson light, the painter, now somewhat more sober but utterly exhausted, fell back into the chair and examined his work thoughtfully. He closed his bloodshot eyes and nodded. It was finished. Who and what was Father Chris Webb describing? Look at the front of your bulletin. This was Caravaggio. He was a drunk and struggled in so many ways, yet look at how he deals with the painting. You can almost see his own expression on Thomas's face. This is the artist, full of doubt and sin, yet longing to touch those wounds, because by his wounds we are healed. There is something in us that longs for transformation. Look at the wounds. Can't you see that it is I? In the resurrection, there is hope and purpose. Our new Archbishop of Canterbury, Justin Welby, says, "We are aflame with the truth that Christ is risen and that life is filled with creative hope and purpose." There's a tragic scene in The Brothers Karamazov where a small boy of 9 gets the consumption and dies. His schoolmates flock to his service, stunned and trying to make sense of it all. They are speaking with the hero of the novel, Alyosha, and they are talking to him about all the things that are taking place. After the Russian Orthodox funeral liturgy, they're led to a member's house for a meal. One of the deceased boy's friends says in a sad kind of way, "It is very peculiar, our religion, all this grief. and we're supposed to eat pancakes. But when you think about it, how profound is that? Amidst grief, we eat pancakes. Whenever we have a funeral in Lent, we wear these Easter colors. The liturgy and the scriptures point to the reality of the resurrection at a funeral. But when you eat pancakes, what a statement. In the resurrection, there is pancakes, there is joy, there is hope, there is dancing. Last Saturday night, we had three baptisms. One of them was a little girl named Mikal. Her family is from Burundi. And we had this spontaneous song service right after the baptism. It was wonderful. But while they were singing, Antoine, Antonio's father, went to the back and he began dancing spontaneously with all this joy. Now keep in mind, 19 years ago, this man was on the run. His own daughter, born in the street, on the run. And yet here he is in our midst, dancing because of what Christ has done, because of his death and resurrection. What proof do I have for the resurrection? Only pancakes and joy, only dancing. Hallelujah. Christ is risen.